Over a bicep. We're going to learn the, go through some of the halachas of Meiser, and as they apply to today's business world. Everyone should really feel comfortable and free. This is interactive. No one here is a, no one's being held, this is not a hostage audience. And just sometimes you have to go a la seid, you have to go in order. So if I tell you we'll get to it, we'll try to get to it. If not, we'll speak after that. But we'll try to start from the beginning. I'm not going to focus so much on the academic side of the sugya. I want to try to get to halachas, but you really can't get to halachas until you understand a little of the background of what we call Meiser, what we refer to as Meiser, which in Poskim is referred to as Meiser Ksafim. We have to delve a little into what where it came from, when it came from, and then we'll see how to apply it. We know in the Torah, we find a concept of Meiser, which is much more limited. It's called Meiser Ani, Meiser Sheni, Meiser Rishon, and these are limited to agricultural fields and limited to where it is, only in Eretz Yisrael. And at some point, we are introduced to a concept called Meiser Ksafim. And Meiser Ksafim refers to giving a tenth of your profit. Okay, now, we know right away it works completely different than what we call biblical Meiser. When a person has a field and he grows his produce, right, he has to give a tenth. That tenth has nothing to do with what is his cost. There's no offset on that. He gives a tenth. That tenth could be his profit. If he's, I would hope he's making more than a tenth on his labor, on the cost of goods and water and whatever it would cost to be chayrish and to work the field, because that tenth is absolute. You don't get any deductions on that tenth. Okay? And then we're introduced to a concept called Meiser Ksafim, which is you give a tenth of your profit. And the laws of giving a tenth of your profit are very different. You are able to offset it with the expenses, which means the profit would be not just the gross, it would be literally what you take home. Okay? Now, where exactly did this come from? That's a very, very good question. It's not clear where it came from. I would think the earliest Makar we have is a Tosfos, but the problem is Tosfos quotes a Sifra that we don't have. So that kind of was a dead end, where that came from. Lemaisa, I'm going to just kind of shortcut to where we stand today, where we look at it, how we look at it halachically. The Bach, very clearly and emphatically, in Simon Shin Lamed Aleph says, and he's discussing what you could use for Maisa, what you can't use for Maisa, and others, where your Meiser can go. And he says, Masha Odom Masa, this is in Shin Lamed Aleph, Masha Odom Masa, Masha Merviach, B'Masa Umatan. This that we find, a concept, that when a person has profit, he gives a tenth of the Meiser from his business, and he calls that Meiser Ksafim, B'Sharevochim, Eina B'Chlal Zeh. This is not part of the discussion when we refer to Meiser, which is Meiser of the Torah. He says, he says a very strong thing. He says that what we call Meiser, what we refer to Meiser, he refers to Meiser's Ksafim, is not something we find in the Torah, and it's not something we find midrabanan. So what exactly is it? So there's a Merami Rutenberg famous Merami Rutenberg, and even though it seems like some of the Pesachim didn't have it, in the end the Pesach Shuvah brings it down, and he says that's how we know it, and that also is in Shin Lamed Aleph. And he says, it became a Kabbalah in Klai Yisrael. Now, a Kabbalah, a minig in Klai Yisrael. Now, a minig usually lends itself to a voluntary basis. But he's very quick to point out, can you hear? Because I'm getting an echo. You can hear? Okay, good. He's quick to point out that this is a minig, it's not a personal minig. When a person has a personal minig, he's noig to do something. So, I should stay close. Okay, I'll do the best I can. Okay, a personal minig is your personal choice. Sometimes it's a family minig, right? Let's say a family has a minig that certain things they do or don't eat on Pesach. So then it's less of a choice because you're part of that family. Then we have a minig that is a minig, he says, a minig Klai Yisrael. And that is not by choice. That is a minig where exactly it started from, maybe we'll get into, but there's a minig that Klai Yisrael has that we give a tenth of our profit to Meiser. Okay, now I'm just going to describe even a step further back. What is Meiser? Because if you'll open up a Shulchan Aruch and Simon Reish Lam Tes, Hilchot Tzedakah, you'll find that Meiser is you have to give Tzedakah. And how much do you give Tzedakah? A tenth. So that should be the end of it. And all mitzvahs on the Torah, a person has to buy an esrig, and he has very limited funds. How much do you spend? So we learn it from Asim Shil Tisasim, from a 10th till a 5th. So this is the way all the mitzvahs go. So what is exactly the great mystery of Meiser? So I'm just going to explain to you what Meiser is, because it's, you have to kind of keep two different spreadsheets open. I'm going to give you an example. If I would make on a deal $1 million, okay, and that is $1 million on my bank account, and I'm going to just use Sukkos and Esrog as an example, but you could apply it to anything you want. I make this $1 million, and I make it Hanukkah time. There's no Sukkos in sight, and I take my money and I blow it on a world tour vacation. And when the time Sukkos comes around, there's $100 left. Okay, my chiyuv, what am I mechuyev at least to spend on this esrog? We look at the bank account. We don't sit and start cheshbonning what you made, because when you made that, you had no chiyuv to buy an esrog. We look at it as, when exactly is the time to buy an esrog? Let's just, for the sake of argument, say, I guess, Erev Sukkos. At some point, if you don't buy, you're not going to have it. So when that time kicks in, you have to go buy an esrog. And at that point, how much should you spend? You look at your bank account. We don't just sit. A person doesn't walk around with a personal accountant cheshbonning how much he had and how much he spent and what he has to cheshbon now to buy an esrog. Okay, is that understood? It's based on how much money you have. All mitzvahs in the Torah are like that. So technically speaking, a person earns money and then he spends it. Whatever he spends it on, at that point, he had no reason not to spend it. Okay? I'm not going to get into the hashkafa. We're discussing straight the halachas of Meiser here. An ani knocks on your door and you have $10 left to your name, right? Because in the last 60 days you want an outrageous spending spree. You have $10 left to your name, you give $1. And now you are mekayim the mitzvah of Meiser, of Simen Reish Mem Tes. Okay? And the Bach is telling us there's a minig in Klal Yisrael that from the point money is earned into your bank account, you have to start keeping cheshbon. We don't care what you spent. We care what you earned. And if you spent it, you have a choiv to Meiser. That is not a concept that we find in the Torah, and that is not a concept that we find midrabanan, but that is the minig that Klal Yisrael was mekabel, and that's how we face it. Okay, so that's when we say Meiser, we mean that you, whenever you make money, there is a chiv on that, a Meiser, a tenth, up to a fifth, from a tenth till a fifth. It doesn't make a difference how much you have in your bank account, and maybe we'll try to get to the practical halachas, because looking at your bank account won't help you tell you how much ma'aser you mechuyev. Because as you spend on tzorchei abayis, it doesn't deduct against what you chiyev ma'aser. It's about what comes in, it's not about what comes out. So therefore, obviously a person has to keep cheshbon how much he has a chiyev ma'aser, in a certain sense, similar to the tax code. But we're going to try to simplify it where you don't need a personal ma'aser accountant. So that's what my rabbi said. Meiser is. Now, there's a very interesting tshuva that's written. Just a quick backdrop. What happened is the Rush, when he eventually, from the pogroms, he escaped to Spain, but originally he was in the place of Ashkenaz in Germany and France. And when he went to Spain, there's a tzava that he wrote, that Rabbi Yehuda, his son, wrote for him. And in this tzava, it's a very fascinating tzava, because he writes that even though by the Anshei Svarg there is no such minig to give Meiser, but we Ashkenazic Jews have this minig, and even though we moved now to Anshei Svarg, that minig doesn't get off. It doesn't just when you leave Anshei Ashkenaz, when you go to Svarg, the minig goes off, and maybe there will be like a mass exodus. The minig is on us who have the minig Ashkenaz. So he writes over there that minig has to be intact. And you see clearly over there that not all parts of Klal Yisrael had this minig. And there's actually a misleading Tashbatz that people quote. The Tashbatz also was not from the Anshei Ashkenaz. And the Tashbatz has a very famous tshuva about how you chesh ben Meiser. But if you look in that Tashbatz, he's not talking about a chiyuv Meiser, because there was no chiyuv Meiser in those parts of the world. He's talking about someone who was mekabel, this is in Shin Lamed Aleph, someone who was mekabel upon himself to give Meiser Ksufim. So then, this was like a new concept in those parts of the world. What is Meiser Ksufim? So the Tashbatz goes to the halachas of Meiser Ksufim. But if you really look in the tshuva, it seems very clear from that tshuva that there was no chiyuv at that point in Anshei Svarg. What Svarg do now, I don't know. But Anshei Ashkenaz we have this minik, and this minik we find in the Rishayim, and we find it all the way through the Paiskim. It's pretty consistent. And there are some shittas, like the Taz, who says it's more than just a minik, but I'm going with the assumption it's a minik, because that seems to be somewhat of a consensus, at least that it's a minik. So we'll get started with this. Now, it's a very important point I want to start, and this is the most practical halacha, practical thing you should come out with. There's one thing to come out, it's this. And I'm going to bring it from the Tashbats, and I brought this Tashbats. I have a copy here, because I want to just read from this Tashbats, and I'll read it quickly. I know it's hard to read inside with a crowd, but he discusses the order a person's mechuyev to give ma'aseh. Again, he's talking about someone who's mekabel this minig on himself to give ma'aseh, but we have this minig, so in that respect, there's no difference. We have this minig, and he says the order that a person, and he speaks about a person who can't afford to give ma'aseh, and he throws it in, that the chiyuv ma'aseh is a chiyuv to be mafresh ma'aseh. In a sense, this minig mimics the Torah de kechiyuv. In the Torah, there's a hafrashas ma'aseh. We have a chiyuv to separate ma'aseh. And he says like this, afilu ein lebanim, v'hu tzarech lemezaynosav ulespinus v'ma'aseh yadav, hu koydim l'chal adam. He goes first, which means, and Rav Moshe speaks about this, Rav Moshe is in Chelek Beis, in Kuf Yud Beis, if you want to see it. A person should separate ma'aseh. That's the first thing you have to know. The mitzvah of ma'aseh is to separate ma'aseh. Okay? Now, who gets the ma'aseh? So, says the Tashbats, the first person who gets the ma'aseh is you. Which means, if you're running a deficit in your daily budget, you get the ma'aseh. And he says, that's the Gemara. That the Gemara says, Chayecha Koydman. You go first. That's the first Chayvet Tzedakah. And in a sense, what he's saying is you mekayim yichiyev ma'aseh. You are mafresh ma'aseh. And now you go through the order, right? We know there's Bnei Ircha, Yichah Koydim, and Bnei Yitzisrael, and Kroivim, all these halachas of who goes first, right? And before anyone else, you go first. And a person to run himself into debt, to give other people's ma'aseh, is 100% misguided. And we find many times in Chazal that even no matter how big the mitzvah of tzedakah is, your person's not supposed to give more than a fifth. Why? Shem Yitzchak Habriyas. It's an extremely important concept you find in the Torah, that we don't want people coming on to others. We want people as much as possible to be self-sufficient for personal dignity and for a person's general health. A person should be self-sufficient. The first person who gets, if you can afford it, the first person who gets before he runs a deficit is self. And after that, then you stand as Allah. You give to your kreivim if they need it, and you give to Bnei Ircha if they need it, and then you can give to other people if you still have money available. But the first halacha we should know is a person should be mafresh ma'aseh. When I say mafresh ma'aseh, in practical terms, it means a person should have a ma'aseh account. Okay, now, my experience, and I'm not the most experienced in this, but I do speak to people often about ma'aseh, and I have found, I don't know what percentage, but it's definitely way above 90%. That if you don't have a ma'aseh account, which means you don't have an account where you put your tzedakah of ma'aseh in, generally you are not giving ma'aseh. Which means if you add it up, and you run all the numbers, year after year, it feels like you're giving ma'aseh, and you're not giving ma'aseh. And psychologically speaking, you should just understand that when you have an account, that's your personal account, and you could buy, it's your personal account, you can buy whatever you want, as long as it's a davar mutter, right? You can buy clothing, and you could buy a vacation, an experience, and when you give that money to the tzedakah, you feel it. And the reason why you feel it, because it's yours, and you could use it, and you're making a conscious decision not to use it for yourself. You're making a conscious decision to give it to an ani. And what happens is, that has somewhat of an oversized feeling with you, and you get again and again, and you think you're giving ma'aseh. But if you really, really look, oftentimes you're not giving ma'aseh, meaning you're not actually hitting the number of 10. And it's also, on a practical sense, it becomes very, very difficult. Every time you give ma'aseh, you're here, you're there, you write a check, always it has to go. Yeah, I know people have that, two columns. The two columns, when you get married, and it's my personal experience, it starts very neat, and it slowly just deteriorates into a jumbled mess. Complete mess. La halacha, you should be mafresh ma'aseh. So that's the first thing. A person, now, if you just have money coming in, and you just write and check, there really, really was no hafreshes ma'aseh. It went from your money to tzedakah. There was no ma'aseh of hafreshes ma'aseh. Practically speaking, it's 100 times easier if, you see, when the money comes in, you just give a tenth to the ma'aseh account. Nothing happened yet. It's not so dramatic. The money's still in the account, right? It's very easy, mafresh, a tenth. And once your money's in the account, it starts burning a hole in your account because it's getting bigger, bigger, bigger. And the Ibsha Helfen should get much bigger. And then it's so much easier to write out. If I care, the Ani or the Moisid, whatever you're doing, it's doing you a favor. You have to unload this money. It's starting to swell up, right? So on a practical level, it should be done. On a halachic level, it should be done. And in general, I find that it's the only way to do it. It really is, because it's very, very hard to keep these numbers. Again, a person's not walking around with his personal accountant. His taxes generally has an accountant. And I don't know anybody who has, I mean, most people don't have an accountant for their meiser. And you are your own accountant. So I'm giving you very sound advice, which is 100% iskahat and halacha. I think it might be required. But if that doesn't talk to you, I'm just telling you, if you want to give meiser, the first thing you need to do is open a meiser account. Account, and you speak to your accountant exactly how to do it with the deductions. That I'm not going to help you with. It's not very hard. But the point is that when you have a meiser account, you're ready to mafish meiser. In addition, Reb Moshe and the Tashbas, they seem to say, if you can't afford Meiser, you can keep it for yourself. But what designates that you're doing Meiser if you're just not giving Meiser? Imagine a guy can't afford to give Meiser. Some people have the sign of Aeneas, and they're not covering the budget, right? So how are they giving Meiser? They're just not. And what happens when some months they do have extra money? There's nothing on their radar called Meiser at that point. But if you always loyally mafresh meiser, and sometimes you need it. When you don't need it, you'll give it out. So this is something which I believe is the most important thing. And if that comes out of this, is that the correct way to do it is to make a separate meiser account and to be mafresh meiser, and that's the hafrashas meiser that Yosef Eimitz discusses and the others. And I think that Mefurish and Tashbats or Moshe, you have hafrashas meiser, and then Kafee, what is available, you do it, and I think that's the best way to give Meiser. I'm sorry? Okay, so we'll get to that. I'm going to get to exactly how it works, because that's part of our discussion here. I saw the question asked, that if you go through in the tour, and I'm just going to finish up this discussion. You go through the tour in Simulation and Aleph, he's very clear that a person doesn't have extra money, he doesn't have a chiv to give tzedakah, right? And besides maybe one pruta a year. And he says, he brings the chiv lahak to panas l'chalodam, about you go first. There's no such chiv. And I saw that someone wants to make a machloikis between the tashbats, who's very clear that you have to separate meiser, and then you can take it for yourself, and this tor, who seems to say there's no such thing, you just don't give. And the answer is very simple. One's talking about hilchas tzedakah, and one's talking about hilchas meiser. Hilchas meiser, when I say hilchas meiser, I mean that minig that the Tashbats is talking about, the minig that we have in Klal Yisrael, to be mafresh and then to give a tenth, that minig is going to require a afresh. I'm not going to discuss this further, and now we'll get into some of the halachas. I think that the most important thing to get benegay all these questions that we're going to have, when to give it and when you have different gains and losses and how does it work, if we're not going to be hiring a personal accountant, I think the most important thing is not to answer each question, but I'll try to answer what I can. But the most important thing, I believe, is to try to build out a formula where you understand how Meiser works. And one of the most thorough tshuvas on this in modern times, and I think modern times mean modern business times, from the Chavis Yor, who was the Rav of Worms in the 1700s, and when he discusses Meiser, it really is applicable to our world. In other words, he's post-agriculture era, and he somewhat ushers in the modern times, and he brings really very basic formulas in how you cheshbon Meiser, and that, I believe, this should be a blueprint how we do it. And there's a tshuva back and forth between the Chavis Yor and Reb David Oppenheim, who is the Rav in Konigsberg, I believe so. And they go back and forth, and they discuss a lot of the fine points of Meister, and a lot of the halachas come out from that. But one thing he says over there, which was, to me, really made a certain clarity in how to look at it, and this is from a hashkafic point and from a halachic point. He says that the musig that we have, the concept that we have of Meister Sofim is that the Ribbono Shel Olam becomes a partner in our business. And he means that on a hashkafic level, and he means that specifically on a halachic level. And on a hashkafic level, we can understand that, you know, I have many times, there are people that take partners because they want the mazel and the schusim of those partners. I a little while back, I had someone who called me, and he had G'dayli Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael as partners. I don't want to say who, because he gets involved with the whole family. But this G'dayli Yisrael was Nifter. And it became a whole shaila if the Yarshim, there were many, many Yarshim, was going to turn into a complete mess. How this Shutfis and his business was going to... But he went over to this G'dayli Yisrael and he says, I have a business, I want to give you 8% and I want you to be a Shutf. And every time there were distributions, this G'dayli Yisrael got a distribution, which I don't know what his chiyuv to do with it. He could have gave it to the doctor, he could have kept it. If he's a Shutf, it's his. But the point is that Izzat Shemusik. Now, the greatest thing a person can do is he could have the Ribbono Shalom as a partner. He's literally working for the Ribbono Shalom. It's Zecher Kli Kodesh you're involved in. What do you do? I'm a partner with the Ribbono Shalom. And every all money you make, some you take and some you give to the Ribbono Shalom. And that Zecher gives a whole new, like Rabbi Klein was speaking, that gives a whole new insight into a person working. He's working for the Ribbono Shalom. The Ribbono Shalom's on his board and the Ribbono Shalom gets a distribution. And this is what the Chavos Yar says. I remember last Erev Rosh Hashanah. This is a funny story, but it brought out this point. There was I don't know if they have the minute here. They do a Taras Cherem and the Chayafta Benidri. They do a Taras Cherem in Baltimore. Okay, it was a minute maybe in Yeshivas, but we do it in our shul. Basically, besides a Taras Nedarim, you do a Taras Cherem. There's a Muslim of Nidri. A person can be in Cherem. He can be excommunicated min Hashemayim. A person certain averus a person does, he could be excommunicated. So we want to the person coming into Yom HaDin, he wants to release himself from this excommunication. So what we do is we have a minig where we have the whole shul basically sits around, and then someone gets up and he says this lashon, "Mischayav to be neither and mevak shatar melaschem." If I am mechuyev in excommunication, I ask that you release me. And 10 people say mutalach, mutalach, mutalach. Now it's not very organized. So you know, no one knows who this. It just stands up and. So at some point I noticed that 2 people stood up together, and it happens many times, and then the first guy starts, the second guy stopped. But this time they both said the whole thing together. 2 people together said it was chayaf to benida. I noticed that it was interesting because usually in halachat you can't hear 2 people. Like straight kerele mishtoyes. I was thinking, it's only a minute. There's not really a source to this. It's not an obligation. So I didn't say anything, but I noticed that 2 people said it at the same time, which should mean that they weren't yotze, they had Taurus and Dharm. Yates is the wrong word because it's just a mini. Anyways, but then someone came over to me and he said, did you see someone? They just said at the same time. I said, yeah, I noticed that. So he said, is that okay? So I said, once you ask, I don't think that's very okay. I guess it's not okay. So I saw he ran over to one of the guys and he told him, you have to say it again. So the guy went back and said it again. So then I called back this newly declared Askin. And I told him, they both have to say it again. One of them is not enough. They both said it together. So he said, nah, this guy, I invest money with him. I can't have him in Cherem. I can't have a guy that's holding my money. I can't have him excommunicated. My money's in bad shape, you know. And the other guy, not that he doesn't care about him, but he has nothing to do with him. But you see such a thing. It's a natural thing. A person has a partner. He looks out for him. And think about it, practically speaking. Imagine, sometimes is that we daven a lot of times that gzeiras that are written should be ripped up. Imagine there's a gzeira, chalila, against somebody's business, and they come to the Ribbono Shalom Kaviyachal to sign off on it. He says, excuse me, this is my business, Find a different business. There's other business you could shop with, So this is something that I think most Yidden would want, that you accept the chi of mice. And I want to just be clear about this. When you have a partner, you could have a business and give 10% to whoever you want. That's not a partner. The definition of a partner is you accept an obligation to him. He is your partner. You're obligated to him. And that essentially is what we find in Meiser. Meiser doesn't mean that you give. Again, and this another reason why you really have to have a separate bank, and I don't mean to repeat it, but I really think it's important. The definition of a person being mekayim this minig lisrael, this wonderful minig, is that you accept an obligation to give maaser, and you accept your Ribbono Shel as a partner. Now, a partner means you are obligated to give him maaser. You can't do it sometimes and not sometimes. And even if you can't afford it, as long as you're mafresh, so then you're also taking. So meaning when you're taking, you're also an ani. You don't actually send it to space. You give it, when we say we give it to the Rebbeinu Shalom, we give it l'tzarchei haklal. And you are on that list as well. Actually, you're the first one on that list. So when we say that we accept the Rebbeinu Shalom as a partner in our business, by definition that means is that you're accepting an obligation to give. Okay, so that's the first thing. And that's more from a hashkafic standpoint. From a halachic standpoint, the Chavis Yair says, it practically means that you give meiser when you give partners. It's as simple as that. Which means like this. If a person has a business and he makes money, he has a, we'll take it to the most primitive level. He's just buying and selling milk. He's buying milk for $1 and now it's like $4. But I'm assuming he's paying more for it. But he's buying and selling milk. $1, $2, right? Obviously, when he just made $1, he doesn't have to take that 10 cents that are running around and put it into his thing. The way it works is when you take money as a distribution, as a partner would take money, you need to remember the Rebbeinu Shalom is a partner here too. It's as simple as that. It's a very practical, simple formula that you'll find in those tshuvas. Which means that when do we give maaser? Very simple. The answer is, when do you take profits? Sometimes there are businesses that the cash flow, and you're doing very well, and if it's growing, right, this is economics 101, if your business is growing faster than your margins, you're not taking money out. The business is doing so well, you have to borrow money, right? Because it's growing at 25% and your margins are 20%. The cash flow doesn't allow you to take money out. So then, there's no maaser. I'm making money, but there's no maaser. The partners, you being a partner, and sometimes you actually have partners, they're not taking distributions, because if they are, they're hurting the business. But then at some point, it comes a point when the cash flow allows you to take money out. It could be you're an employee and you have a salary. Obviously, that's money that you're working, you're taking out into your personal account. At that point, an employee is much more simpler. Every time you get your check, 10%, the Rebbeinu Shalom is a partner in your employment, right? It doesn't have to be you have an own LLC. And whatever mechanism we're using and discussing to earn money, the Rebbeinu Shalom is a partner there. Whenever the money comes your way, as cash flow allows, the Rebbeinu Shalom gets 10%. It's as simple as that. Now, sometimes the business makes a fortune of money, but you have to, for whatever reason, the cash flow, it's not a good time, because maybe there's more deals coming around. It's not a good time to take money out. No problem. The partners didn't get a distribution, and neither does the Rebbeinu Shalom. Now, what happens after that if things have a sudden downturn, and now you lose money, right? Now, think about it practically. Imagine Apple would make a lot of money, and they're holding by giving a dividend, and then they plan on giving a dividend, and then suddenly they have a downturn in business for whatever reason, a recall, whatever it is, a massive write-off. They have to tax, the government comes after them, so they can cancel the dividend. So the money wasn't taken, it wasn't taken. Imagine Apple gives a dividend, and now they're fucked. Now there's a massive charge that they don't really comfortable with the cash flow. Do they call the dividend back? The answer is they do not call the dividend back. So, once you are mafresh meiser, your work is done. You took a distribution, your Rebbeinu Shalom took a distribution, that phase of the business is over. It belongs to your shareholders, your partners. You do not make capital calls against the Rebbeinu Shalom's partnership. You understand? We owe him much more than he owes us, so you never call that money back. That is the basic format, blueprint that I got from the Chavis Yair. Everyone is invited to get their own interpretation. It's in Reish Chav. But you have to go through the whole Shaila. It's back and forth. But this is the way I understand it. The Rebbeinu Shalom, and this thought, I saw it echoed by Shlomo Zalman a few times, not specifically the Chavis Yair, but he echoes this idea that the Rebbeinu Shalom is a partner in your business. And most people understand in the basic, most rawest form how partnerships work, how distributions work, how dividends work. And therefore, when you make money, if you're holding and making a distribution, Maaser gets that money. And when we say Maaser, this is maybe reason number 8 why you have to be Mafresh Maaser, because if you're not, it gets very complicated, because you are holding and giving money, but you just didn't decide where you want to give the money to. And then there's a loss. And I think when you're Mafresh Maaser, that's when it's over. Now it belongs, and you should know, you should understand that every partnership, there's no chalent of the money. There has to be a separate account between the partners. So the Rebbeinu Shalom needs a partner account, and you have an account, and you're makfish it, and then it's in the Rebbeinu Shalom's account, and now you are, you have another hat on, and you're called a gabbai tzedakah, and you have to figure out what you're going to do with this money and who you're going to give it to. But as soon as you take the maestro account, take. So that answers the gentleman's question in the back, when to give it. Now, that brings other questions that are not as black and white. What happens when you have different businesses? Okay, now this is also addressed in the Chavis Yar, but this, again, it's not as black and white. A person has his business that he works in, whatever it is. He has an accounting firm, a law firm, and then he has a real estate investment. Okay, so the real estate investment unfortunately lost money. But he's taking a nice distribution on his accounting business. So, for example, for this quarter, he takes $100,000 from his accounting business, but a $25,000 investment, small investment that he made in somebody's real estate deal, it got wiped out. The mortgage company came and they repossessed the property. Okay? That is a good question. And there's different opinions. Now, this is gonna be a theme that you're gonna hear for the next few minutes, is that we find a very interesting concept. And this is why I started with the Hakdama, that it's a minig. What's the difference if it's a minig or it's a chiyuv min derabanan or chiyuv min ha-Torah if you have to do it anyways? Right? You have to do it anyway. So what is the difference besides the academic sourcing of it? What is practically the difference? And the difference is, even though you have to do it, there's different ways how you can do it. And this is a musik you find in a few places. It's something I've heard from Paiskim. And this is a musik, if you need actual maramukim, where this is, if you look in Siman Reish Mem Tes, there's a wonderful Pesachei Tshuva who goes through. There's a big shaila in the Paiskim about tzedakah, if you're allowed to give tzedakah and meiser for mitzvahs. Now, we say mitzvahs, we mean that you have a second cousin that is well off, could even be wealthier than you, but they are not very religious. And because of that, the kid gets bar mitzvah, they're not buying him a set of tefillin. This is not something that they're fully exposed to, the mitzvah of tefillin. But if you buy him tefillin, he'll wear tefillin. Okay, so now what do? Could you use meiser? So what do you think? Could you use meiser? So it's a good question. Some people say, you can't use meiser. Some people say, what do you mean? This is nothing more wonderful than this. The guy's going to put on tefillin. Of course, meiser is something that we do for the Rebbeinu Shalom. This is definitely for the Rebbeinu Shalom, right? And the answer is, you're both right. It's a shaila. It's a shaila. The Chassam Sofer seems to lean, and if you go through the Mishnah test, is that really meiser is not for mitzvahs. It's for poor people. Now, there's a small caveat. I wasn't going to get into Hilchas Tzedakah here, but when you give money to a yeshiva or something like that, there are inevitably poor people that are being helped because essentially you're compensating for people who are not giving tuition, and we assume many of those people are poor people. So, but I'm talking about specifically a case where poor people are not being helped. Generally, when you help the klal, you are helping poor people. That's generally. So then that does not include this shaila. But we're talking about there are wealthy people and you're buying them tzitzis or tefillin, whatever it is. So this is a shaila. I'm not going to go into the shaila. You can look in Siman Reish Mem Tes and the Pesachei Tshuva Sif Beis, and he discusses the shaila, but he says something that's wonderful from the Chassam Sofer. He says, Hayois, it's a minig. A person has a right to dictate how he keeps the minig. So that is, Moiv Rabbeisai, a wonderful blueprint in moving forward with shailas. And I've heard this many times. I've asked questions to my father-in-law, Shlomo Miller, and he said he doesn't believe a person has the right to that deduction. But if he really wants to take this deduction, he should be mekabel moving forward. This is how I give meiser. Whether you have to do it between a gimel or not was a separate question. But this is a very important point. And even though we don't have the ability to reject this minig, you do have the ability to accept it in a certain way because you're not rejecting the minig. This is how, and he says this lashon. He says in miyad, even though he comes out that really mitzvahs, this is what we call mitzvahs. Mitzvahs is not included where ma'aser should go. He says avol in miyad b'tchilas hanagosoi. if when he starts the mikabel this minig, and the specific shaila was there was a bachur in yeshiva, and he was a handyman. So ben hazmanim, he worked and he got money. During this man, the yeshiva used to ask him a lot of times to do things, put up a light fixture and do this and fix the electric and fix this. So he wanted to know, can he, he's not charging yeshiva, but he would have a right to charge anyone else. He would charge everyone else. So did he have a right to take a deduction? And it wasn't, it's not a clear shiloh if he's allowed. Do you understand the question? A person is I'll say it again, it's not really important to the shiva, but a person is doing work for free for a yeshiva as a bachur in the yeshiva. If he was doing work in the guy down the street, he would charge $100 to put up a light fixture. In yeshiva, the yeshiva said, can you put up a light fixture? Right? So he put up a light fixture. He wants to say, I just donated $100 to yeshiva. So if I make $1,000, you don't have to give $100 to tzedakah. I just gave $100 to yeshiva by not taking the money. That was the question. By deductions, can he do that? And I remember my father-in-law said, if it's important to him to do it, he should say, this is how I am mekabel to give ma'aser. Because that's still within, now it doesn't work for everything, but if it's still within the parameters of what we call ma'aser. And I was just, he says, Ava miyad b'tchilas hanagosil lahafrish ma'aser. Hisne sheyochel lases memenu dvar mitzvah. Moide maharil, the maharil, his moide, t'mir menachem, that works. So that's a very good formula to know. That when we get into shilas about how to do it, so again, the many poskim say that when you have two businesses, and again, it's a little iffy how we apply our formula of shutvis, but generally, when you have business A and business B, business A makes money with its partners. The partners want money. They want their dividend. They want their distribution. And the fact that they could even be partners in the second business, it's irrelevant. They still want their money from business A. So if we would take the real basic formula that we laid out, you should really have to give ma'aser. Regardless, if this is something that comes up and it's important and you feel like you're being choked and this is how you want a cheshbon, all your businesses mushed and we cancel it out, and sometimes, again, it's hard to start, it gets a little tricky with the cheshbonis, and I generally like that things should be very symmetrical, because even though in the beginning, if you're going to start cheshboning your deductions and one business against another business, it starts clean and then it just dissolves into a mess. And if you want to keep it really, really going long term, I recommend whatever you do, it should be really, really symmetrical that it could last. And the most simplest way to do it is whenever you get a distribution on any level, you give ma'aser on that. That's what I'd recommend. But if it's important to you, you should know that this is how you want to be noig. The Chavis Yoreh does say that a person technically can do that. I'm sorry, it was, yeah. Yeah.
If the Rav could give a little bit more clarity, to the extent I understand, offsetting one business, business A against business B, income loss, things of that sort.
Right.
Let's say, for example, you have a situation where you have a loss carry forward.
I'm sorry?
You have a carry forward loss. Okay?
In your business.
In your business, exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Does that bear into this? And number two.
How would it work when you have a partner with that? He got his distribution, right? How does that affect your partner? It doesn't affect usually. In other words, that's my point. What you're doing is you're applying modern day tax law. Try to avoid that. I really mean it. Okay. All right, for the rest of us, try to avoid that. You do what you need to do, but. I'm assuming they're not all accountants here. I try to look at it on a more practical level. That look at it, what would happen if you had a partner, and what happens when the law changes, and this, and then it's going to be a headache and a mess. And generally speaking, people don't walk around with an accountant. Now, you do, because you are. But generally speaking, I just wish that it would be set up in a way that would work. And essentially, this is how it would work. Yeah. There's no official Zman. I'm going to tell you like this. You're going to go through... By Tzedakah there is. But imagine a person is growing a business. And sometimes businesses, especially big ones, they don't take profit for years. So where's the money coming from? It's not. There's no profit coming out. It's as simple as that. And that's the way I look at it. Now, I know you're going to find in different paiskim, different zmanim, and that's true. But I think it all depends on how a person runs his business. So I'm not telling you when to give ma'aser. I'm trying to take a step back. I'm trying to give you the formula of when you give ma'aser. The formula that you give ma'aser is when you monetize profits. And this is a very important thing I didn't get to, but a person who buys a piece of real estate and he buys it on the cheap, he buys it from foreclosure from the bank, and he buys it for $500,000, and he really got a steal, and now it's worth $10 million. When does he give ma'aser? The answer is he doesn't. He didn't monetize it. That's the answer. He doesn't give. He gives it when he monetizes it. And that's the chiyuv ma'aser. The chiyuv ma'aser is when you monetize. And you monetize, when do you monetize? And the answer is whenever you monetize. So I'm trying to give a formula to so you want to know Shana B'Shana or not. It depends. If you get paid Shana B'Shana, then good. Then give ma'aser Shana B'Shana. Certain times the person doesn't get paid that. And if you got paid already, and as a practical point, if you get paid every month, you should give every month. What are you waiting for? Yeah. Okay, so there we go. Here we have the great loophole of refinance. We'll get to it now. Okay, fine. So there's a wonderful loophole that people use. And the question is it a legal loophole or an illegal loophole? I tend to think it's an illegal loophole, which means it's not a good loophole. But this is what people have told me they do, and they're very proud of it. And this is what they do. They buy it. This can go on literally forever. It can go on 50 years. I spoke to a yid who was way, way older than myself, and he told me he never had to give ma'aser. Not never to give ma'aser besides, you know, what he was taking. But basically, he tells me like this. He buys a property, and he bought it back in the day. And this was some big properties that he had. And he bought it with a mortgage. And then over years, he paid up the mortgage. And then, or the property went up enough, he didn't have to. And then he refinanced out. Okay, but let's take it practically. He paid up the mortgage. So he bought it for $1 million, and then he refinanced, he got $10 million. That $10 million, he tells me, I'm not giving ma'aser on that, that's a choif. He pays it up again, he refinances again, every 20 years he gets $10 million, and he is living tax-free. He's like a walking tax shelter. He is living tax-free, because every time he gets money, it's against the loan. Every time he pays it up, it's in the property. It's not monetized. All monetization, again, is against the loan. And that is what we call the great loophole of ma'aser. So, my rabbi, see, a lot of these people, what they do is very contradictory, because they're taking commercial loans, for sure, until recently. These were non-recourse loans. These were not personally guaranteed on these commercial properties. These are loans that they didn't write a het to iska on. And the reason why they have no het to iska is because Asai Machan Reb Moshe, which is definitely not the purview of our discussion here. But Reb Moshe holds that when you get a loan and you have no recourse on it, it's not a loan. You have no obligation to pay, right? So they're not writing a het to iska because they have no obligation to pay. If you have no obligation to pay, then you just made a lot of money, right? And then they're not giving ma'aser. Rabbi, on a non-recourse loan, there is almost no way you can get away with that. Meaning, there's almost no halachic basis for such a thing. You got your money, the money's in your pocket, and there's nothing they can do about it. Besides the property itself, which you would get a much lower value, you understand? So, if you have a recourse loan and you actually have a choiv, still it becomes very, very hard to... Essentially, this is how, and generally that's how it's looked at, when you have, again, when you go back to the partner model, when you in the world of syndication, when the syndicator takes out a refinance, that's when he makes distributions to the partners, and the Ben Hashem is waiting for his chelik as well. And every year, and every 20 years, he's wondering why he's being passed over. So, in general, a refinance is viewed as a profit, and I don't know about tax law, but the partners definitely look like that. And if you apply the basic formula of, and I believe you should be consistent about it, the partners would get that, and then the Rabbeinu Shem should get his as well. 1031s is another example. I'm just going to, I'll get to it in a second. 1031 is another example. The 1031 is a little tricky because you made money. See, I'm just going to explain. I'm going to take a step back because real estate's, I'm sorry?
What's a 1031?
A 1031, as he would explain to you, is when you take money that you made on real estate, and you, a lot of times the profit is so great that your tax bill is just frightening. So they don't want people to be frightened. So what they do is they allow you not to take the money. You identify, you have a window of time, you identify a new property, and you roll over what you sell plus the profits into the next property, and it's almost like you didn't sell it. You understand? So you buy, just for example, you buy a building for $1 million, and you sell it for $2 million, you have $1 million tax liability. Instead of paying on that, you take the $2 million and you put it into the next building for $2 million. And it carries forward. They're watching you. But ultimately, now you're on your $2 million, you could take the cash flow of the rentals as it allows, but you don't pay taxes. Okay? Practically speaking, no money went in your pocket. That's the bottom line. You made a lot of money, but no money went in your pocket. Rabbi Sai, when you are running a grocery store and you buy milk and you sell milk, $1, $2, now you buy 2 milks, now you buy 4 milks, and you keep on growing your grocery store, it's partial to everybody that until you take money out, it's one business. And as cash flow allows, you make a distribution. Until then, you have no chiv to give meiser. But real estate, it's not really like that. And every piece of real estate, it's not milk. It's not just you're turning. Every real estate, every piece of real estate, every purchase, every sale, it comes with its own terms, its own price, usually its own partners, its own financing, how you do it, and what the terms are, what the plan of the real estate is. And the way and almost always it's on the two LLCs besides. So the way I look at it is really two different businesses. You made money, and you monetized that money. And what you did is you rolled it into the next investment. I look at it that you monetized. And that is the way I've heard from the Daily Paiskim, that on 1031, you monetized. You actually monetized. But you took the money, and afuchim atras alomali, why should I take it and give it back? And for tax reasons, you kept it and you rolled it. But you actually monetized. And this is becoming very popular now in where I come from, where the syndicators who take their point on the deal are taking it in the property. And they're saying that I never made money because I took an extra slice of the property. Okay, that is monetization. The brokers are taking slices in the thing. That's zicha monetization. A guy is a broker. He makes X percent on the deal. So he says, instead of giving me cash, I'll take a slice in the deal. So you're a broker and you got paid. You just got monetized. Your work got monetized. It got in the form you rolled it. You have a right to take cash. You rolled it into the deal. You want it in, you rolled it in. The passes would be you are mechuyev meiser on a 1031, and the passes would be you mechuyev meiser when you roll your whatever brokerage fee you want in. Now, I know that this becomes to many people impossible. Just impossible. If you're just starting out and this is your first or second deal, you didn't take money out of selling and you don't have the $200,000, $300,000 that you're obligated to pay meiser. You just don't have it because you didn't get it. And if that's the case, again, I would refer you back to the Chassam Sofer that the Pitzchei Tshuva brings, that it's not a clear halacha if you mechuyev to give ma'aser or not. And a person has a right to say, l'chayr, a person has a right to say, and I've heard this from my father-in-law, even though he's not a fan of not giving ma'aser, he always bets you should be mechuyev. But if that's how you makabel, that I'm running a real estate business, I have no other way to do this, I can't. I'm going to roll it, and I have a chuyev. The same way it gets rolled in, I have a chuyev to ma'aser, but I'm not giving it yet. L'chayra, that would work as well. So that's the long and short of it, just the basic formula of how you look at Meiser in today's modern world. I think I'm basically out of time, but I'll answer questions. But no, and this is not a captive. Everyone's free to move around the country. Yeah.
A salary worker, so if they're going to get their salary...
Minus the taxes, yeah.
Right, so withholdings, it's more than just taxes. There's insurance.
It's what they take home, yeah. See, this is something people have a hard time with. You know, if I work in a company and... none of your personal expenses is deductible against Meiser. It's only what the expenses of the business. So a person tells me, you know, I could take less money from my work because they're docking it for for medical insurance. But then I'm only mechuyev what I took home. But if I take home more and then I pay my own health insurance, then I'm mechuyev on the whole thing? And the answer is yes. That's how it works. Except what you're taking home. Now, if you're taking home less, because there's more that they're chesmening, they're giving you other perks, like medical insurance, so then you have less of an obligation to Maisa.
Why is it different than the broker who gets rolls?
Because it's very different. He earned money that he's just rolling into an investment. He's just monetizing. But over here, this is what you're taking home with. Yeah.
1031, oftentimes from day one, the investors are doing a day to the Huffy that they're going to the first
the Shutfin, all the Shutfin. Okay, it's a legitimate point. I'm not disagreeing with you. If you have a bunch of Shutfin and no Shutfin has a right to pull out, it's not so common. Not so common, but I've heard such a thing. No Shutfin can pull out. They sold it and no Shutfin's allowed to get their money. So then maybe you could look at it like it's one continuity of a business, and then maybe not mochiv maisa. I don't disagree, but I don't think it's as common as you think.
If they're allowed,
it's a new business. It's a new business. Then the Rebbe Shem wants to pull out too, I think. Yeah. I would think that you start. The best thing would come out is you open a bank account and start. I don't have any. Again, it's a minig. You were trying. You just never heard this before, but now you came to a shir, and now I would think that again. I'm focused on people just doing it right, and I think, practically speaking, if what comes out of this shir is you're going to start going back to figure out what happened, then nothing will come out of this shir because you're never going to unwind that mess. Whatever you did, you did. You tried your hardest. I would recommend moving forward. Start with, if you don't have, you never figured it out. You never had. Open a bank account, and that's your Meister account, and let your accountant know everything written from this account is tax deductible because it's stuck. And start from day one. Whatever you can figure it out. But not most things you can't. Okay. Yeah.
So if you have a case one, would that be basically you can take 10% of what my case one says? It's 1120S.
I mean, a K-1 just summarizes what money you got. The K-1 is not important to me. Whatever money you got, you give 10%. You give it when you get it. You transfer 10% when it comes in. If you wait for your K-1, like I wait sometimes for my K-1s, sometimes they just never come. But I would recommend But the money comes, meaning... I don't know why you want to. Why you want to look on a K-1 level? I know eventually it equals out.
Part of that K-1, you've deducted salary. The officer's got the salary, so it's reduced. The
Who got the salary? Your workers?
Your
employees?
Okay, fine.
So then, the money tells the story 100% of the time. The K-1 doesn't. Just follow the money. Okay. Oh, I work is done. Oh yeah. So. They're supposed to be giving it out. They're a gavet stucker. They're supposed to be giving it out. Most people who live not in a cave have opportunities constantly to give it out. What's the goal? So it's a good question, but it really depends on how fast it's coming in. And if you're going to be too slow and it keeps on backlogging, you're probably giving it out too slow. You should keep some sort of a balance because you're going to have tzarchim of relatives of things that you're going to have to give. So I'm not saying to clear it out every time the money comes in. You might want to keep somewhat of a balance. But if it keeps on growing, you're not giving it out fast enough. Or, I don't know, you're making money. You should just know, in general, I find people look at it the wrong way. And I'm going to, for sure, end right now. This is reason number 19, is your mafir stucker. If your mafir stucker, you will see that even though you think, you know, there's a cause and effect. I make money, and that's a cause, and then the effect is I have to give tzedakah. You will see that as you clear out that Meister account, that is the cause, and the effect will be there'll be more money tumbling in. You should really do that. You really will see it. I'm sorry? That's a good question. You would think you could lend money to Meister. There's an Rabbi Yehuda on this, and he says people do it. And he tries to understand exactly how it works. it definitely is the minig that you could lend money to Meiser. Yeah. Okay. Shkoyach, I appreciate everyone listening. Hope this was helpful.